We're going to sort some things out today. We're going to do some judging. We're going to make some judgments. We're going to make some calls. Merry Christmas. We don't know what we're talking about. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. The holiday season is here, and that means entertainment that only comes around once a year, and when it does come, it's weird as hell. Characters behaving bizarrely, jumping down chimneys, flying with a glowing red nose, drumming in front of a newborn baby Jesus, all kinds of anomalous behavior happening. Enough to make you wonder, what's their deal? What's going on with that person? Well, we're going to try to figure it out with the help of some friends who are, like me, wildly unqualified. We're going to do some analysis, some observation, the occasional very loose diagnosis. We'll talk. We may disagree. And again, we're not real psychologists or psychiatrists, but the characters we're talking about are not real anyway, so what's the harm? I will say that any observation on Santa Claus is only on Santa as depicted in media. We're not talking about the real Santa Claus because we've never met him. He's secretive and quite busy. I also want to point out that we may come to the conclusion that some of these characters are doing just fine and are totally well-adjusted. All right, let's get some answers. Let's meet our panel. She's a writer for The Simpsons and co-host of the Lecture Hall podcast, Brothy Gupta. Hi, Brothy.
Hi.
He's the host of two podcasts on Maximum Fun, which is kind of show-offy, Tights and Fights, and We Got This. Hal Lublin is with us. Hey, Hal.
Hello.
And she's a comedian and host of the No Dogs in Space podcast and Professional Friend podcast, Carolina Hidalgo. Hello, Carolina.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We're going to get some answers here, friends. So we're going in a snake order. So I'll start, then Brothy, Hal, Carolina, then backwards again, Carolina, Hal, Brothy, me. And so to get things started, I've brought in the character that I think kind of kicked off this whole thing, which is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And I'm basing this on the song and a little bit on the TV special. So here's what we know about Rudolph. He's shunned by the reindeer. He's left out of their games. And then his red light is discovered. He's asked to pull the sleigh. So he forgives everybody and he just does it. So he's a people pleaser or a reindeer pleaser. And that means what's common with people who are people pleasers, reindeers especially too, I would imagine, self-neglect, eroded sense of self. And I worry, you guys, a little bit about a borderline personality disorder situation. The Mayo Clinic says it's marked by an intense fear of abandonment, going to extreme measures to avoid separation, a pattern of unstable, intense relationships, and rapid changes in self-identity. What do y'all think about Rudolph?
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Because
I see myself being a people pleaser too, or someone who like thinks like only their purpose is the thing that's valuable to them in some way or another. And so it's like that kind of thing with Rudolph. It's like that song is all nice and everything. And I love the song. It's very catchy.
Sure.
But we should also say, Rudolph, you also have other great qualities in the song.
Yeah.
If we can fit that in another verse.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Here's my worry. I think that Rudolph might grow up to be, and I think that this is a diagnosis, sort of a Monica.
Okay, from Friends?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
From Friends.
Yeah.
And I say this because I think that, like Monica, Rudolph gets a lot of his sort of self-worth from service, from acts of service, because he is the one with the nose, right? So he's the one with the headlight.
Mm.
And Santa's sort of famously, his work hours are in the dark.
It sets up that way, doesn't it? Hal, what do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think Rudolph knows who Rudolph is.
Mm.
I think his entire mental well-being, his entire personality is built around his nose. The nose is bad and it's weird, so he can't play in any of the games. The nose is the worst thing in the world. It's a foggy night. All of a sudden, he's like a walking lighthouse. The nose is the greatest thing in the world. So whether he's up or whether he's down, it's all tied into how other people feel about his nose. And he is following along with that. He hates the nose. Now he loves the nose because the nose is a beacon.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that the nose is is literally a red flag.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we had a breakthrough here today. All right, so that's Rudolph. Brothy, you're up next, and you have what's often thought of as a secondary character, but you went straight to it.
Yeah, because he sort of shines in a way. You know how, like, when you watch something when you're a kid, you can appreciate it in one way, and then when you're an adult, you're like, oh, no, this has so many layers. So as a result, I think that the star of the Grinch is Max.
Max the dog. And what do you think's going on with Max?
And I don't know, like, the appropriate language for this, but I think that he and the Grinch are definitely codependent.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But he has no self-confidence. He lets the Grinch do so much, like take advantage of him, be mean to him. And that kind of thing is like, if you have a sense of self, you don't let the Grinch do that.
Yeah.
Max, if it were up to him, I don't think he would want to ruin Christmas.
Yeah, but he's so crushed under the weight of the Grinch and the expectations there.
Exactly. Okay. Because he, Stockholm Syndrome.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. He does sort of throw his sense of what's right and wrong because you can tell he's conflicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He absolutely doesn't want to ruin Christmas, but he'll do whatever the Grinch says. There's nothing more important than the Grinch. He's created this worship.
Exactly.
Of the Grinch. The Grinch above all else.
I wonder if he is so obsessed with the Grinch and the Grinch is evil, are we letting Max off the hook here a little bit? And maybe he's evil as well.
That's what I was going to say, that this doesn't mean that Max isn't accountable or shouldn't be held accountable.
Yeah.
It just means that there was another complicated layer.
Okay. Carolina, thoughts?
Yeah, I think maybe Max is more of a, because I know I have a pet. And I kind of see Max sort of as a pet as well. And I know my dog, Georgie, will just go along with whatever I tell her to do most of the time. So I'm not going to hold her accountable for that, even though, like, we've gotten lost in places and she can't find us back out or anything. So really, she doesn't have a lot of responsibility. So I'm going to let Max off the hook this time. Just because of that situation of being in a codependent relationship. Because sometimes it's like, I don't know how to get out of this except to just to go along with it and then just prove that you're wrong by you seeing it for yourself. And maybe Max was all the wiser for that.
Okay, so we got some codependency and some Stockholm Syndrome happening here. All right, let's move on. And Hal Lublin, you're going to stay in the exact same TV special that we're already on here.
Yes. Yeah, I want to throw the Ron Howard film out. Not because I think it's terrible, but because I think it does too much to try to explain away who the Grinch is. I think it's clear that
Grinch
hurt people hurt
story.
People. Yeah, we don't need the Grinch. Like, it's pretty clear he's been hurt at some point in his life.
Yeah.
Because he lashes out. He has aggressive behavior. He has narcissistic tendencies. And so his only recourse, he's so angry that a group of people have happiness that he doesn't, that the only thing he can think to do is try to take it away from them. Not to make himself feel better. The only thing he's going to enjoy is that other people are suffering. And that's a big issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it tracks with what I know about narcissistic personality disorder, where the person will only view the rest of the world in terms of how they're being treated, how they're being regarded, what they can benefit from it. So it's certainly that. I don't know if evil is in the diagnostic and statistic manual of actual mental illnesses, but there could be some of that as well.
Yeah, I think he's a little misguided in a lot of ways too.
Yeah.
We always gonna feel for the Grinch a little bit, right? I mean, you have to, just a tiny bit, even if it's Jim Carrey in a costume and everything. Or, I'm sorry, we're not doing the movie. But whatever. it's still kind of like the same idea where you know there is a tiny little beating heart in there that's all it's got to do is like be shown a little bit of kindness or anything. He just needs all he needs to do is get a little bit of exposure to something joyful, and then bam, it works. Like, I mean, if only that worked in real life, but it worked for the Grinch at least. In Whoville, maybe it works all the time.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought up the heart issue, though, because it might be a cardiovascular thing as well. I mean, he goes from having a problematically shrunken heart to a massively enlarged heart, which really he's on the edge of a stroke or a heart attack by the end of it.
Yeah.
And that's got to, I mean, mind-body connection, that's going to have an effect on your behavior.
He's well into Andre the Giant territory. We all know that's what took Andre from us, and it's going to take the Grinch. So he better enjoy as many Christmases as he can, because it's a problem for him. They don't even know, like, is there a bad holiday they can introduce him to that will normalize it?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess
the week leading up to Christmas. I think that's the one.
Black Friday. Yeah, I mean, with both Max and the Grinch, you wonder if there is it a trauma-based thing in which a lot of their behavior can be explained, if not excused, or is it how much free will is involved in this kind of thing? Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right, well, let's move out of Thurl Ravenscroft territory and over to something slightly more contemporary, although pretty old by now. Carolina, you have Clark Griswold.
Yes, from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, played by Chevy Chase, who's also probably insufferable. I don't know, personally. I don't know. Maybe not.
It's a whole different mental health issue if we open up Chevy Chase.
There we go. That's a whole other thing that we can't open up that box of worms. But Clark Griswold's, like his character, he's the head of a household. All he wants perfectly to have a perfect family whole holiday thing go down perfectly. That's why I thought that maybe he has some kind of OCD tendencies of him planning everything out and everything in its place. I have OCD, so I can understand that. But, you know, when I look at it, because he's like getting, you know, his son to like check every single bulb, and that's thousands of bulbs to make sure that everything works out perfectly, exactly the way he plans. And if things don't work out the way he plans, the first time it's like, that's okay. And the second time it's like, no, all right, we'll get through with that. And then by the third time, he's just like, we're going to have a happy Christmas no matter what fucking Bing Crosby says. Or I'm paraphrasing here. But I kind of saw that. I kind of saw like a lot of OCD tendencies as well as a lot of ADD as well, which is also what I have. So I'm saying I'm Clark Griswold. Because I get it. He's daydreaming all the time of sexy women, which is not, unfortunately, not something I do. But he's like, his mind is in the clouds. He's driving them. He's almost killing them every time he gets behind the wheel. And then he loses it at the very end when he gets enrolled into the Jelly of the Month Club because of his boss, who apparently had promised him a bonus. And then he loses his mind. And that is a very fragile ego right there for someone who's working so hard to make everything perfect.
How many times have you seen this movie, Carolina?
Enough.
How many times have you seen it? Enough times.
I've seen it so, it is a yearly, yes, it's an annual thing that I enjoy, and holy crap, the whole time I'm just like, he's right, you know, no one else is understanding, everyone else is trying to have fun, but no one else is trying to go with his schedule, and I get it, I have a schedule, I have a to-do list, I do, I wish I could bring it up for you right now, I'm in the other room, but
that's
yes,
okay.
So I understand
okay.
that. We gotta check mark all the boxes. Keep them happy.
Well, that seems pretty textbook OCD and ADHD. I'm accepting it. Hal and Brothy, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would throw in there's a weird streak of like passive aggression where he every outside of like the come over here and I'll show you, where he threatens the neighbor with the chainsaw. Or the decoration, whatever it was, everything he says to somebody else is said very slyly, under the breath, not looking for that confrontation, because he can't deal with something getting real, or just asking someone to leave, or saying, Eddie, can you keep the dog outside? So
again, it's like I'm looking in a mirror.
yeah,
it just. My
he has no outlet
life.
For everything. Like all this emotion is pent up. So when he gets trapped in, comes out by him getting angry at the lights or him being disappointed, or when he's trapped in the attic and is crying, watching these like trying to recapture a magic that probably isn't as good as even those films make it out to be. So he's looking for something that he'll never be able to get.
It's a form of perfectionism, really.
Mm-hmm.
After something that will never be achieved. Huh.
Yeah, it's sad. It's a sad, sad thing. But but we laugh. We laugh at him because it's funny. Because it never works out.
It never dawned on me, Hal, until you talked about it being a passive aggressive thing, because I've hung up Christmas lights here in Minnesota, and I thought that's just how people talked. I thought that was just I thought that was polite discourse, but maybe I'm a little out of touch. All right. So that's Clark. And then Carolina, staying with you, and you're staying at the movies with the Gremlins, who, you know, aren't the subject of a whole lot of Christmas specials, but you have some thoughts.
Oh, yeah, because, well, the first Gremlins movie was set in Christmas, and so I thought that's pretty good.
Sure.
And there is, of course, as we know, like the legend of the Gremlins. And in this movie, this cute little Mogwai spawns a lot of other Gremlins, but these ones are, like, not as cute and not as sweet. They're actually more like narcissists. And they have these kind of tendencies that make them a little sociopathic, because they are creatures from the night who want to just disrupt all kinds of, like, and just create all kinds of mayhem, pretty much. And so this is something where, like, anything goes. This is Dodge City. This is, like, fun, whatever, playing card games, getting drunk, shooting someone in the middle of a game, you know, all that kind of business. That they're at a local bar, they're throwing beers at Phoebe Cates and stuff, and they're very demanding, and they're just asking, they're just like in their id, they're just asking for whatever they want at that moment, and it's all about instant gratification constantly, and they're always laughing because it's always really fun for them, except everyone else. And so to me, that just seems just like a very, they obviously they have many problems. But really, the whole point of it is to ruin everyone else's Christmas. And I see them. I see them as kind of a, they're not evil, because they're fun, but they are a fun type of evil.
Yeah. Well, are you saying that anytime I throw beer bottles at Phoebe Cates, that's a sign of mental illness? Because I've got to reevaluate some things.
If anyone throws anything at the beautiful Phoebe Cates, then yes, you are being, you're going to be led away by like three men in jackets. And that's the case, unless you are a short gremlin, apparently.
See, I'm going to disagree with you here, Carolina. I'm going to let the gremlins off the hook, because it's like when they talk about a great white shark attacking someone. A great white shark was just eating. That's just what they think that they're supposed to be doing. A gremlin can't control the species that it naturally is. And it's, you know, behaves in a way that we see as anomalous, but it's perfectly, perfectly in touch with their nature. I think the gremlins would be very poorly adjusted humans, but I think they're very well adjusted gremlins. So Hal and Brothy, I invite your input on that.
I was going to say something similar, which is that we need to manage our expectations of what the gremlins are going to do.
That's true.
We can't disrupt nature any more than we already have.
And it's terrible beauty.
And it's horrible, horrible beauty.
Yeah. You knew I was a scorpion when you took me across the river.
Right.
So we can't be surprised when grandma's motorized chair goes a little wonky.
Okay.
That's just, they're just gremlining. And you see, you know, in the new batch, there's a lot of different varieties that chaos can take.
Well, see, now we're into questions of canon. Like, is the new batch part of the story?
That's the only canon I accept.
Okay. Gremlins 2, the new batch.
Only Gremlins 2 for any film universe.
Okay. Well, I do remember, like, they did do a lot of things like kill Dick Miller, which we all know that's a no-no. But then they also murdered other people or really like maimed them in a very awful, vicious way. But of course, it was adorable the whole time while we're watching this. But I would say probably one of the biggest grievances ever was when they're all sitting in a movie theater and talking the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I am letting the gremlins off the hook a little bit because of the talking and also the murder.
Again, they're gremlins. That's what they're going to do.
They're
like,
gremlins.
I actively avoid spiders because I'm afraid of them. And I believe that they are trying to murder all of us. And you can't convince me otherwise. But I'm not going to be mad at the spiders for being spiders. I'm going to get real far away from them and then hope they're not in my hair.
And then cry.
And cry. The whole time. Whole time.
Coming up, unqualified amateur analysis of the Charlie Brown gang. And what was up with those misfit toys anyway? What was their deal? Plus, I'll just say it, Santa. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best. Because obviously, there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh. We are back with our panel of funny people, Brothy Gupta, Hal Lublin, Carolina Hidalgo, performing psychological evaluations of popular Christmas characters. And Hal has some thoughts on Lucy from Peanuts.
Isn't it so interesting that the child who offers psychiatric advice probably needs more help than any other child in a neighborhood rife with problems? Okay. Lucy Van Pelt is narcissistic, has a overly dominant, aggressive personality. And just on a personal note, she really seems to dislike Snoopy. And I have a lot of distrust for people who hate dogs. That's not something diagnosable. It's just a, sort of a red flag.
I see the rage issues. I see the cruelty. You know, I'm gonna stand up for my old friend Depression here when it comes to Lucy. I think she is looking for help by becoming a psychiatrist. It's not uncommon for people to take that route to try to figure out what's wrong with themselves. And you know, depression isn't always a sit around and listen to the Smiths kind of thing. It's often a lashing out at unexpected times. I think there's something missing in Lucy's life. And I think there's like a lot of people, she's trying to take control of the outside world, you know, because she can't take control of her own mind.
Oh, that's true. And she does require, she wants to be acknowledged all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
She wants to be the star of the show. She wants Schroeder's attention.
Brothy, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that she is, look, she's somebody who really feels like she has all the answers, but, you know, I think that she is looking for more. But she can't just accept help. She has to be on the side of giving it.
Mm. Carolina, what do you think about Lucy?
Oh, that's a very good point, actually, because I also see her aggression and her reluctance to try to even accept help as well and everything as, like, maybe there is some sort of depression where it's more of an aggressive, very active depression where she is actually going through life and pretty much just interacting with every single character she comes across with. And boy, do they get like a healthy dose of Lucy.
Yeah, they get a lot of Lucy.
Every single time.
Yeah, she's a freight train of fuss budget, that Lucy. All right. Well, staying on Charlie Brown, Brothy, you are bringing in a character that I hadn't initially even considered for this show. And so I'm really eager to hear what you have to say about Snoopy here.
Okay. So Snoopy is obviously America's first dog. He is beloved by all and as he should be. I have great respect for him. I love what he does. Which sure. is he lies down on top of his house all the time. I'm a huge fan of that. And I think that he's, you know, practicing self-care. I think he has a bit of an ego issue.
Mm.
He does not respect Charlie Brown very much.
Okay.
I mean, I'm curious to know what you guys think. I just think that he is perhaps very insecure about himself, about his house, which he, you know, dresses up in all sorts of lights
mm-hmm.
for Christmas. And he really takes it out on Charlie.
Let me offer a bit of a curveball on this one, because I'm thinking about the Charlie Brown Christmas special and Snoopy's role in that. And it is a little consistent with what you're saying with a lot of his behavior. I submit social anxiety disorder to be considered here.
Oh.
He knows that he's different from the humans. He has mm-hmm. a full range of complex thought and the inability to really voice it, sure. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't get involved in the same storylines. He stands yeah. back from the crowd. He does his own thing. He has his own bit. And it's not a generalized anxiety, because he seems very confident in plenty of ways. But when it comes to interacting with anybody except his precious little yellow bird, he kind of detaches himself.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Carolina, Hal, what do you think?
Yeah, I actually, you're right, because Snoopy does also sometimes embrace other characters, like the Red Baron sometimes.
And sure.
Snoopy kind of goes into a different kind of mindset of like, I'm going to create another reality for a little while here. And maybe that could also attribute, that does attribute a lot to social anxiety. Of being like, you know what? I'm this famous ace fighter pilot kind of person. And this is how I'm going to figure out everything around me, the people around me, and
right.
my whole reality. So
he's gonna
I
empower
can see that
himself. Yeah,
a bit of an escape, a little bit. Yeah,
I mean, one of the overarching themes of Snoopy's life in general is that he is limited from opportunity because he's a dog, can't get into the space program, can't go into a hospital, can't be in the nativity play, but he shows up anyway. And part of how that manifests itself is a complete disrespect for boundaries.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
You know, when Lucy's barking out commands, where's he? He's to the side of her making fun of her.
Right.
He knows that she doesn't like him. What does he do? He licks her face every opportunity that he gets. He is up in her space, knows she doesn't like it. For him, part of that, he has that need to rebel because he doesn't fit in. Well, I'm Joe Cool. It's all of those things. He can only retreat into his imagination because it's too difficult trying to live out his life in the real world, because he wants to be anything but who he is because he feels so limited.
You know, I was going to say an oppositional defiance disorder, this sort of reflexive opposition to authority and to social norms. But in order for it to be a disorder, it's got to really be creating problems in somebody's life. And I don't think Snoopy really has a lot of problems. I think he's oppositional and defiant, but
no.
It seems to be working out fine.
Snoopy's doing okay.
Snoopy's doing okay, the bastard. All right. So, So I brought in Hermie the Dentist, and this is the elf from the Rudolph Christmas special. And this is just from the original 1964, the Rankin-Bass 1964 special. Hermie wanted to be a dentist, didn't want to build toys, was cast out or left the village. To start with, the other elves are just bigots or jerks. But there is such a thing as an impulse control disorder. So I considered maybe Hermie had that going on, that he would just ditch his whole life and go off to be a dentist. But impulse control disorder is usually tied to pyromania or kleptomania and not dentistry. So I don't think it's that. It doesn't really fit into OCD, I don't think. And Carolina, I'd love to get your input on that.
I've never wanted to be a dentist.
No, see, there you go. I might go with it just being an impulsive tendency, an impulsivity. But maybe no more than like a kid from California who wants to go to college in Maine. Like it's like Hermie is finding himself, and it appears very strange, and it might appear like a mental illness to the elves, but I'm kind of on the side of him being actually secretly well-adjusted, but I'd love some input.
I agree with you. I think he's perfectly well-adjusted. He knows what he wants, and he's not willing to compromise on that. So he doesn't want to live the prescribed life of an elf and make toys. And them casting him out doesn't stop him.
Yeah.
You know, he ultimately finds his calling anyway, and he wouldn't if he wasn't relentless and sort of dogged in pursuit of his passion.
Hmm. I mean, there's some maturity issues, too. In order to pursue dentistry, he takes up with a reindeer and Yukon Cornelius. But, you know, that might just be a maturity thing.
Hey, yeah. Whatever you need to get, you know, to the next level, whatever you need to do, because, I mean, if he did feel like he had to be stuck in that situation, then, I mean, then are we going to bring up cults or anything?
Yeah.
Because obviously he has a choice, and that's good. That's a good thing. And I do consider him well-adjusted as well because of that, because it's like, no, I want to be different this time. You know, I want to go join the circus or whatever, dentistry. Oh, that is an odd one, but yeah, well, whatever. More power to him.
Wait a second. Are the elves and Santa a cult? That possibility just occurred to me.
I mean, depends. It really depends on, like, are they unionized or not? And
are
that
they compensated
really is,
or not? Are they?
That is the number one thing, yes. Or do they all kind of work together, some sort of, like, socialized, like, thing? We are not sure because we've never seen the paper Santa. So we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Brody, what do you think? Cult or not cult among the elves?
I think that...
Matching outfits. Charismatic leader.
When you're working... Yeah, that's the thing is when you're... I mean, what's the difference between that and like Amazon? You know?
Slightly higher wages, but maybe not.
But maybe
only
not.
Only the one headquarters.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so moving on, I've talked about Hermie, and I want to talk a little bit about where Hermie ends up, which is the island of misfit toys. And again, apparently there was like just 20 years ago, there was another Island of Misfit Toys movie where like Jamie Lee Curtis did one of the voices, but I'm staying out of all that. I'm sticking with the original 1964 special with the Rankin Bass. So this is the island where there are all these toys that have fundamental flaws. And so they are, I think they take themselves a sort of self-banishment to this island. So there's like a Charlie in the box whose problem is that he's not named Jack. There's a train with square wheels, so it can't really move around as much. And then there's other toys that never get any lines, so you don't know what's wrong with them. All these toys seem to have been through trauma. It's kind of a classic sort of self-blaming after trauma. But the one that really fascinates me, there's a doll that's just referred to as Dolly, who has red hair. She seems perfectly fine. There's nothing, she doesn't mention any problems that she has. Nobody else does. And somebody asked Arthur Rankin Jr., I just learned this today, who created the special. They asked Arthur Rankin Jr., why is she on the island of misfit toys? And he says, well, the little girl who owned her didn't like her and rejected her, so she's depressed.
Wow.
So I know. So Arthur Rankin provided that one for us. But does anybody else, you guys, do you remember these toys, the Island of Misfit Toys?
Sure. I wonder if there isn't a little Munchausen by proxy going on with the
doll. Really? Do tell.
Where she's like, she might be like sort of sanding off the wheels while the train is sleeping to keep it real square and go up. Nobody likes you, but I'll take care of you. Don't worry. I'm going to keep all of you. Or at least, not even physically. She doesn't have to put any Lysol in their soup. She could just be mentally or just keeping them down, making them feel bad about them enough that she can control them and say, yes, we're all alike. We all definitely had something glaringly wrong with us, and that's why we're here. It wasn't because I just have red hair.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I did not expect the phrase Lysol in the soup to appear during this taping,
full Hal Lublin experience. You're welcome.
There's no turning back. Now I'm thinking of The Sixth Sense, which is really wonderful. But, you know, they this thing happens and then they separate themselves from society, which is that a problem with a society that is so ready to reject anything that is anomalous, or is something going on in the minds of these toys? Brothy, Carolina, what do you think?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe some of it does have to do a little bit with what's going on in the minds of these toys, probably. Because it doesn't feel like a, you know, crabs in a bucket mentality. Maybe a little bit what Hal was saying. Maybe a tiny bit, a little bit of whatever happened to Baby Jane kind of thing. Like, okay. Oh, well, we're both a mess. We're just going to keep each other down. Who knows what craziness is going to happen on a beach. But
the Grey Gardens Island of Misfit Toys.
When really, it was all in their heads, maybe, because they were just perfect the way they were. We ever thought of that? Yes. And on discount, probably.
Well, presumably, in a world with billions of people, there are other toys that are anomalous that didn't end up on this island. I think it's that grouping, that self-selecting grouping that troubles me. Brothy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that they're all very depressed. Mm-hmm. And I think that the most depressing place you could be is, and I hope they don't take this personally, is where they chose to live.
Frozen island just in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Where all they do is just stand there.
All they do is just stand. Well, they've also all convinced themselves and then validate each other's idea of we're worthless. We are not going to be played with. Who would want us?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. So it's a self-enforcing, depressive colony.
Yeah.
It's admirable in a way when you think about it that they got it that organized. Found a location, got themselves there.
And that's all the energy they had.
That's what they've used it all up. How much more can a scooter do on its own, after all?
I mean, that's the thing is infrastructure takes a lot of energy.
It really does. It really does.
For a group of very depressed toys.
They saved up all their motivation to get there. And then there they are. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, Brody, I gave you kind of a challenge here. I asked you to take on the big man, Santa himself.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Okay. Santa is definitely narcissistic.
Mm.
I think that Christmas is sort of all about him. And he wants there to be this whole day where everybody is focusing on him. That's actually what he works all year for, is this day where people are like, oh my God, Santa, he's awesome, right? That guy Santa, he rules. And I think that kind of thing is, I just don't think that that's healthy. I think that you should give to give and then not, you know, you don't need this much credit for it.
You don't need decorations at every place.
You don't need decorations.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like, you know, it's getting a little cultish. Plus he like runs that. You know, he skews a little bit Willy Wonka, but unlike Willy Wonka, I do think that he's less honest.
Hmm. Boy, that's turning me upside down because I thought, well, when you said narcissistic, I'm like, it's all about other people. It's all about being magnanimous and getting it all out there. But, you know, when you think about, then every kid has to write a list to Santa and then they've got to answer to Santa whether they've been good. And it's a total power trip, isn't it?
By the way, that's how you isolate people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you keep people dependent on you. It's very hard to get out of that kind of a relationship, the one that children have with Santa.
But isn't that also a central theme of like every film? What he's most upset about is like, people don't believe in me anymore. And like, that's a huge, like, there's still plenty of children who believe in you. What are you talking about? But he's like, no, they're older now. They have to believe. Make them believe. Come on, Billy. Get on the radio and tell them I'm real.
I have a spoiler, though. I think that Santa is actually good in the end because he's only getting, he's doing the meet and greets, he's doing the thank yous all beforehand. The parade is before everything starts. Actually, the parade is right when he's like, I'm getting this together. I have everything almost set up. I'm just going to start delivering very soon. And then as soon as it ends, he's just like, he slips out into the night and he's like, you know, completely forget about me for the next 10 months if you got it. Totally fine. Not a big deal. I think, if anything, Santa is like the best performance artist I've ever seen. He's Banksy.
But Hal, I do think that you have a really good point that his entire MO is just, I exist, believe in me. Mm-hmm. How much effort did he put behind convincing Dylan McDermott that he's real? That could have been put towards giving his elves health care. But no, he wants to tell Dylan McDermott and Elizabeth Perkins that he's real, even though they're all, you know, it's a lost cause. Move on. Yeah. Move on. They've already said what they believe. You don't have, what do you have to prove to them? Why do you need that?
Yeah. I mean, God in Oh God puts less effort into having everybody believe in him. And it's the same sense of like, you got to go convince people. I got to go get on television. You got to do it. I can't do it. But Santa's like, he'll get up in there. He's like, who do you think left you that bike, you little fucker?
Yeah.
It was me.
Yeah.
Santa will shut the whole thing down. He'll shut down Christmas if we don't bow to him enough.
Yeah. He just wants cookies, guys. That's all he wants. He just wants to eat a snack.
Me too.
That's where I'm standing in this. I think he's good in the end. I think maybe there is a lot of things. He needs more PR, better PR, and that's probably the biggest issue.
Overall. It is so obvious who among the four of us is going to get the best presents this year, and it's Carolina by a mile.
And who grew up Jewish?
I'm playing the long con.
Yeah, the rest of us are going to get a knife made out of coal stabbed right into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you think is more psychologically broken, Santa or Scrooge?
I think Santa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because of the need for validation.
Scrooge ends up coming around, you know. Santa, there's no hope for him.
I say Santa's still okay as long as there's no real strings attached, although I did hear about the whole naughty and nice thing.
Yeah.
And let's just hope that is just not a real list.
Yeah.
If it were, then yeah, we have some real fascist problems.
And again, we're only talking about the Santa that we've seen portrayed. I'm sure the actual Santa's fine. Yeah.
But also, not to dump on Santa too much, but in every one of those movies, have you seen what happens when somebody from the North Pole like encounters like a department store Santa? They lose their mind.
Yeah.
You're not Santa. I know the real Santa. Like, Santa's mad that there are people dressing up as him and pretending to be him because that's his job. How dare you take Santa away from me? That's my whole thing.
Right. Yeah, he's willing to just seclude himself at the North Pole for almost the entire year. And then he just needs all the validation in the universe in a very concentrated dose. It's troubling. Just ahead, some curveballs, a couple of characters who you haven't thought of maybe, but maybe you should or you shouldn't. Grab your lightsaber. It's almost Life Day.
Tights and Fights is the perfect wrestling podcast from Maximum Fun. And this week, we're speaking to Austin Creed, better known as WWE's Xavier Woods, to find out more about his favorite TV show growing up.
And I would watch Golden Girls. All of the things that I am obsessed with in my life, all of them have that aspect of teamwork. So Golden Girls is four women, right, in the house. No. Their fifth person is their chemistry. That to me is the most important thing because that's what we're all trying to find.
WWE and G4's Austin Creed on Tights and Fights. Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aether Sea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back making unqualified mental assessments of pretend people with our guests Caroline Hidalgo, Brothy Gupta, and Hal Lublin. Hal, you are going into a very deep cut here with a TV special that George Lucas would rather we not watch.
The year is 1978. We don't yet have Empire Strikes Back, but we're desperate for more Star Wars. So along comes the Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978, featuring Beatrice Arthur and many other guests. The Jefferson Starship is in there, Harvey Korman, Art Carney. Listen, the first 30 minutes of this special, and I kid you not, contains almost no English because we're watching Chewbacca's family in their treehouse, consisting of his wife Nala, his son Lumpy. But I want to talk about his father, whose full name apparently is Atichituk.
Okay.
But he's called Itchy.
Itchy.
He's
Chewbacca's
got problems.
Dad.
He's real upset the whole time. He hates his grandchild, and all he wants is to be left alone. And when he's left alone, what does he do? He exhibits no impulse control by putting on a VR headset and doing what I maintain to this day is masturbating to Diane Carroll's song. So I think that there is an unhealthy relationship with sex there. There's impulse control because he's doing this out in, it's a very open concept house.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't in the other room giving grandpa a second to nap. He's just like, well, I guess I'll plunk this down on my head and see what happens. Ooh, Diane Carroll, who knew?
And this is an observation of not Christmas, but Life Day, as I recall.
Correct. Yeah, okay. Chewbacca's got to get home for Life Day. it's just, I mean, I can't imagine that he and Chewbacca had a great relationship when Chewbacca was growing up. Just
yeah.
Judging by how he treats his normally, like, even if you have a rough relationship with your son, the grandchild becomes a chance, like, oh, I can get it right this time. I can be the grandparent to this child.
Loving.
Yes, I'm going to be nurturing and kind. No, that's out the window. This kid drives him insane.
So do we think this is like a depression symptom, or is this just his mental condition? He's an asshole.
He's a horny Scrooge, right?
Yeah, okay. He's just a horny Scrooge at the end of the day.
We're not even getting to Scrooge on this one. We should have left that. Okay, I've got nothing to say about the Diane Carroll obsessed Itchy from Star Wars Holiday Special, but I'll believe Hal's research on this one.
I want to quickly plug, if you've never seen this, to watch it. It's on YouTube. You can find it. The first time I saw it, I was sitting on the floor up against the wall on the other side of the room, laughing so hard I had a headache, and I couldn't stop the tears from coming out of my eyes. That's how great it is. I mean,
yeah.
It's just absolutely bizarre for a million reasons, but he always stands out to me as a character that does not seem to want to be there, even more than Harrison Ford.
Yeah, if you want to know what it's like to be incredibly stoned, but without using marijuana, the Star Wars Holiday Special, I think, is the way to go.
It does feel like it takes a while.
Yeah.
When you go through it.
Yeah. That's so generous.
So maybe more of an edible then, I guess. All right. So speaking of maybe off the beaten path Christmas characters, Carolina, you brought in Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, the movie I saw on the plane yesterday. It just made total sense in my head. Because it's set in Christmas.
Okay.
Of course, it's how they say Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Well, so is Lethal Weapon.
And yeah. No, I've told my kids all about Lethal Weapon every year at Christmas. It's just part of the holidays.
Yes, and I'll regale you with the story of Martin Riggs, who was a special forces operative from Vietnam, who later became a narcotics police officer in Los Angeles, and then he got stuck with somebody he don't like, which is what's his name?
Danny Glover.
Glover's character, Murtaugh. And so, of course, this is a buddy cop kind of thing where they kind of both find the meaning of Christmas, I'd like to think, even if they don't think it that way. Martin Riggs, he definitely does exhibit so many clear signs of PTSD, not just from Vietnam, from being a sniper, but also from his wife dying, as we see in like pretty much like the first 5-10 minutes of the movie, where he is putting a gun to his head and into his mouth while watching videos of him and his wife who had sadly passed away, and he has a death wish. He's going out and he's doing his job, but he's trying constantly to be killed by criminal, right? Like, you know, suicide by criminal is what he's trying to do, and kind of trying to get himself to just die already, because just to put him out of his misery.
With the gun in his mouth at the beginning of that movie, I did think there might be something mentally wrong with this guy.
Yes. and that's the first time we meet Martin Riggs.
Yeah.
I mean, the gun, that's the titular lethal weapon, right?
Yes.
Well,
yes, that's true. He is, because he knows his martial arts pretty well. But you know what? Once he learns kind of the significance of family, with Danny Glover's family as well, he sees how important that can be, how important it is to spend time with people that you care about during the holidays, and also that he just probably should just not die. And that's great. If anything, that's a great lesson, or in any way whatsoever, just seeing like, well, you know what, there's more to it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Martin Riggs actually comes out even better than he ever did before.
It's actually true. It's a scientific psychiatric fact that if you can discover the true meaning of Christmas, your mental illnesses are washed away.
Mm-hmm. As long as you kill Gary Busey's character.
Or Gary Busey himself.
Yeah. You have to confront your Gary Busey on your partner's front lawn.
Exactly. It's all a metaphor. Yes. He didn't really kill all those drug traffickers.
No. No, those were his mental obstacles. Carolina, you're up next because of the snake format here. We're heading into our final round. Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas, which I thought was a Halloween movie.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes it's a Halloween movie. During Halloween, I want to watch it, and I've been told it's a Christmas movie. And on Christmas, they're like, no, it's Halloween. I'm like, well, pick one. Or the other.
Sorry, I'm making it worse.
It's very difficult to discern this, but I'm going to call it a Christmas movie just because Jack Skellington, the main character of the story, is my favorite character. He's one of my favorite characters. He's a bone daddy. He's very sexy, and he's very good at what he does, as being like the pumpkin king. And he, the pumpkin king of Halloween Town, that's right.
Okay.
And he is just this, he's not happy with his job, even though he's so good at it. And everyone thinks he's doing fine, but he's falling into a depression. And he doesn't know what he wants to do in life. He just knows he's unhappy. So he's in a depression. And then he finds out about a place called Christmas Town. And then all of a sudden, he's up again. So to me, that kind of felt like some sort of a few like bipolar kind of ideas, because I am married to someone who is bipolar. And so that kind of idea of a depression and then a manic episode.
Sure.
Excited moment of like, you know what? I'm not just going to celebrate Christmas, but I'm going to take over Christmas and I'm going to kidnap Santa Claus and I'm going to call him Sandy Claus and I'm just going to change everything around. And as we know, like, he's not listening to anyone. Everyone else is trying to ask him, like, hey, don't you think we should take a minute to think about this first? And Sally, his love interest, is like, I have a bad feeling about this. I don't think this is a good episode that you're going through. And he's just like, nonsense. And then, of course, later on, he realizes, like, no, you know what? I'm actually pretty happy with my life. And it was just an episode.
Yeah.
And that's all. It almost ruined Christmas for everyone, though.
And we can only hope that he gets some good help, some treatment to kind of even out those peaks and valleys a little bit.
Yes. Yes. Or at least fall in love with Halloween again.
Yeah. Well, I'm convinced that he's taking a ride to at least Bipolar 2 town, but possibly Bipolar town.
Possibly. I mean, it all comes from a good place, obviously. It just comes with some sort of personal satisfaction of trying to just to win over something and just to try to make just get these grand ideas and have everyone else go along with him on this. And this is something he tried to do until he realized, no, actually, everything I needed was in here, and I'm pointing at my chest.
Which is all bones.
He's just a skeleton. Yes.
Hal Brody, any thoughts?
No, I will say that I do think he's very attractive. I am very attracted to Jack Skeleton. I think he's really sexy. I'll say that.
He's taken, apparently.
Yeah.
Because of Sally.
He sings and dances.
Of course he is. Who wouldn't? Yeah.
He is a catch. He definitely is a catch. But still, even though he's so great and everyone really respects him, like, you know, even the people who are the most popular, even the people who are the sexiest and who have it all together, sometimes they have real deep issues in there, you know. So maybe that's something to learn about.
Hal Lublin, over to you. And this is Emmett Otter from, is it called Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't hear about this thing for years, and now I feel like I hear more about it every single year. It's a Muppet special, correct?
Yes, this is a staple of childhood. It is a Muppet-based, it is a Jim Henson produced, and he's in it, special in which Emmett and his mother both have no money, and they both enter this music contest. There's a little bit of Gifts of the Magi thrown in there, but he has a very odd relationship. You know, obviously, Pa's gone, so he's grieving and dealing with some depression. But there is like a weird kind of codependency with his mother. Like, he needs to take care of his mother, which there's nothing wrong with that. But he also, it's just something weird about their relationship with one another, where you get the sense that he's never going to move out. Even if he gets married, she's moving in. Or he's moving in, or they're moving in. Whoever he marries is moving into the house. So that little shack they're in is just going to fill up with more otters who all work and join the family band that sings at that restaurant where they book a gig at the end.
So your concern about Emmett is what?
And the problem is?
I just don't think he's ever going to grow up. I don't think he's ever going to really be able to head on deal with the loss that he's, you know, look, they recover a little through music, but it seems like he's not able to really express what's going on inside. Like, they keep secrets from one another and he's selling things to, it's just, it all seems a little bit too cloak and dagger for the person who he's supposed to be closest to in the world. There's something dysfunctional in that relationship. I can't quite put my finger on it. But a lot of it I would chalk up to the grieving process of losing a parent and someone who obviously was beloved and was an important part of their family.
At least you see him. Maybe if anything, you definitely see him. He shines through and then I could see that. And that's great. Maybe that's all he ever wanted.
Mm.
All right. So the final one I have here that was one of the ones that got me thinking about this whole topic, because I thought, who would do this kind of thing? It's the little drummer boy who, when the baby Jesus is born, the Son of God, a newborn baby, he gets it in his head, I should go there and play drums right by this baby. And I'm racking my brain trying to think of, like, what known disorder would cause such a lapse in judgment. And unless one of you can suggest something, I just have to give a mercy ruling that he's just a kid with terrible judgment who thinks way too highly of his drumming skills.
He also has an ego problem.
Like, maybe an inferiority complex?
Could be.
Like, I'm not the king of kings, but I can play that. Maybe if I go, hey, look at me play the drums, everybody. Look, isn't this good? That dumb baby can't even play the drums yet. It can't even work its neck.
He's going to die for our sins. But I'm okay on a snare drum.
Yeah. Look at me in 4/4.
There's only one song about him, but there's a lot about baby Jesus.
Yeah.
And I think he's just trying to make it a little bit more even, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You never find out, like, did they become friends later on? Like, did they hang out? And, you know, did the drummer boy become a drummer teen and a drummer young adult?
Oh, yeah. I hope so. I hope he, like, showed him, like, who the Ramones were and, like, where the cool place to eat at the mall was right. Or some sort of, like, Big Brother thing.
Yeah.
Kind of be like, I'll show you the cool stuff.
He grew up to be Dylan McDermott.
Not Dermot Mulroney. Dylan McDermott.
No.
Very important mm-hmm. distinction. Well, my armchair analysts, my drastically unqualified mental health professionals, I thank you so much for all your help. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm less qualified today than I've ever been.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody. Take care of yourselves.
Next time on Depression Mode, what I have come to believe is true about mental health and what is not true, near as I can tell. We'll get that sorted out as well. It's a big time for sorting things out on the show. Christmas characters, facts about mental health, December, we're getting it all straight. So that'll be nice. If people support our show through a small donation, we can keep being here together. If not, we can't. If you donate, you make Depression Mode happen, and we thank you. If you haven't donated yet, don't worry. It's easy. You can find a level that works for you at MaximumFun.org/join. Hey, I wrote a book. I want you to read it. I want you to buy it. I want you to enjoy it. It's called The Hilarious World of Depression. Catchy title. And it's a memoir. It's about me and mental health and life. There are jokes in it. The Hilarious World of Depression is available where books are sold. Be sure to hit subscribe on Depression Mode. Give us 5 stars. Write reviews. That helps more people find out about the show, which we want them to do. We want them to know about it. I want you to know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 for free at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. The Crisis Text Line, also free and always available. Text HOME to 741-741. Use our electric mail address, depressionmode@maximumfun.org. Drop us a line. Tell us what you think. Tell us what's on your mind. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. We're on Twitter and Instagram at DepreshPod. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter at John Moe. Hello, credits listeners. There are 3 things I've been hearing about so much in the last few years that I never used to hear about before. 1, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. 2, narwhals. 3, air fryers. I pray to God there's no scenario that involves narwhals, otters, and an air fryer. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now. Building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out. Building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason. Maybe there's no reason. I just keep believing. No one knows the answer. Maybe there's no answer. I just keep on dancing.
This is Unica from South Africa. You're not doing it wrong. This stuff really is hard.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.